Ever buy something online, something shipped from, like, overseas, and think, huh, I kind of wish I knew the real cost of this thing, like, not just the price tag, but the environmental cost too? Well, get this, the EU is already, like, one step ahead with this whole carbon border adjustment mechanism thing.
CBM.
CBAM, right.
It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. But the wild part is, this isn't some, like, futuristic concept. This is happening right now. The EU is basically saying, look, if you want to sell certain goods here, you got to pay a price for the carbon emitted during production.
And the key here is no matter where in the world that production happens.
So it's like they're putting a carbon tax on imports, right?
Essentially,
We're
yeah.
talking about things like cement, steel, fertilizer, all that stuff that's like essential.
Yeah, the backbone.
The backbone, but often it comes with like a hefty carbon footprint.
Oh, sure.
But today's deep dive is less about like the nuts and bolts of how CBAM works, and more about whether it can actually deliver on this whole green global trade promise,
Right.
especially for developing countries.
Especially for, yeah.
And to help us unpack all of this, we're turning to an essay by Racine Husinov.
Okay.
He's an international trade expert. He's the brains behind Seamless Trade.
And his essay gets into some really important nuances here. I mean, on the surface, the EU's goal, sounded great, right? Reduce emissions, prevent what they call carbon leakage, which is basically companies just like hopping around the world to dodge stricter regulations. But Husinov, he argues that it's not that simple.
It's like telling someone, hey, let's run a marathon. You expect them to keep up, but you don't realize they might be wearing flip-flops.
Exactly.
And you got the latest, running shoes.
And to take that analogy even further, like imagine those flip-flops were the only option for them for like decades, because that's just the economic reality that they were handed. And that's where this whole idea of common but differentiated responsibilities comes into play. CBDR, you might hear it called.
CBDR.
And it basically acknowledges that developed countries, through their historical emissions, have played a much bigger role in creating this whole climate crisis that we're in. So to expect developing countries to just suddenly make the same rapid transitions and often very costly transitions without substantial support, it feels off.
Okay, so how does this, like this whole CBDR thing, how does it actually play out in the real world? Like, give me an example.
Yeah, so Husinov, in his essay, he points out this like really startling figure. Developing countries, they need around $378 billion with a B, annually just for climate adaptation. And that's not even talking about transitioning to greener industries. This is just dealing with the impacts of climate change that are already happening, the floods, the droughts, the heat waves.
Hopefully.
But here's the thing, CBAM, as it stands now, it doesn't have a clear way to provide that kind of financial assistance.
So it's like we're asking them to foot the bill for a problem they didn't even really create.
That's a big part of Husinov's argument. And it gets even more complicated when you look at the potential economic fallout. So remember those certificates that companies need to buy under CBAM? Well, those costs, they often get passed down the supply chain.
So like a steel mill, for example, in a developing country, they might not have the resources to just instantly switch to super clean technology.
Right, exactly.
And so they get hit with these extra costs, which makes their steel more expensive.
Compared to steel from a country that maybe has stricter regulations already in place.
And more resources in the first place.
Exactly, and more resources, and that price difference, it can make them less competitive in the global market.
Which then impacts jobs, economic growth,
The whole shebang.
the whole shebang.
And Husinov, he uses this exact example in his essay to show how CBAM, maybe well-intentioned on the surface, could actually end up making those existing inequalities in the global trading system even worse.
So we're talking about some potentially big costs here for developing countries, like a system that doesn't really seem to, take into account those historical inequalities. What's the answer? Is there even one?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? And Husinov, in his essay, he really digs into some potential solutions, or at least approaches. He spends a lot of time on this debate about carbon taxes versus cap and trade systems. Both of them are aimed at making, polluting more expensive, but they do it in very different ways.
I've heard those terms before, but honestly, like they just kind of they all blend together in my mind. Can you like hit me with the ELI 5 version? Explain it like I'm five.
I'll give it a shot. All right. So think of a carbon tax like a parking ticket for pollution.
Okay.
Right. You emit more carbon dioxide, you got to pay a fine.
Okay.
And the fine is based on, you know, how much you spew out. Pretty straightforward. Now, cap and trade, that's more like, it's almost like a game of musical chairs.
Okay.
But with pollution permits instead of chairs.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Go on.
All right. So with cap and trade, the government sets a limit on the total amount of carbon emissions that are allowed.
Okay.
And then they issue a certain number of permits, right? Each one lets a company emit a certain amount. Companies can buy and sell these permits. They can trade them amongst themselves, you know, like a market. So if a company wants to pollute more, they got to go out and buy permits from somebody else, which can get pricey. But if they clean up their act, if they emit less, then maybe they've got extra permits and they can sell those off and, you know, make a little profit.
So it's like creating a financial incentive for companies to actually reduce their emissions.
Exactly.
Got it. But like, how does this whole cap and trade thing, how does that work for developing countries specifically? It seems like it could like go either way.
Right. And Husinov really gets into that. So on the one hand, cap and trade, it could actually be a financial boost.
Okay.
Right. If developing countries, if they get a decent chunk of permits to start with.
Right.
And then if they're able to reduce their emissions, you know, maybe by investing in renewable energy, for example.
Right.
Well, then they could turn around and sell those extra permits.
To the industrialized nations.
To the industrialized nations. Exactly. The ones that are, you know, still hooked on fossil fuels.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like, you know, they get a little financial pat on the back for doing better than expected.
It sounds good in theory, but I know you're about to say, however.
But you know me too well. You see, Husinov points out that these carbon markets, just like any market, right?
Yeah.
They can be volatile.
Right.
Prices go up and down. And for a developing economy, that kind of uncertainty, that can be a real problem for long-term planning.
Right.
It's hard to attract investors to, you know, build a wind farm in your country when you can't even tell them what the price of carbon is going to be in 5 years.
Right.
It's risky.
It's like building a house on quicksand. Not a good recipe.
No, not at all. And let's not forget about the potential for manipulation, right? I mean, we've seen this in financial markets time and time again.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no reason to think that these carbon markets would be any different. I mean, what's to stop some big corporation from coming in and just, like, hoarding all the permits, right?
Yeah.
Driving up the price, undermining the whole point of the system.
Right. So cap and trade, potentially good, but comes with its own set of like caveats and risks, right?
Exactly.
What about carbon taxes then?
Mm-hmm.
Are those any better? Especially for, you know, for developing countries? Are those a better way to go?
Well, Husinov's argument is that a well-designed carbon tax, and I'm stressing well-designed here, that could actually be a game changer.
Okay.
Particularly for developing economies.
And why is that?
Because it generates revenue.
Right.
Directly for the government.
Yeah.
And that money, ideally, could then be reinvested.
Right.
In things like renewable energy, climate adaptation, you know, even social programs.
Yeah.
To help those communities that are most impacted by, you know, the shift away from fossil fuels.
Right.
It's like hitting, you know, two birds with one stone. Maybe a whole flock of birds with a really, really well-aimed stone.
Right. I like that analogy.
Yeah.
But I imagine there are some pretty big ifs involved here.
Oh, absolutely. And as Husinov says, the devil is in the details.
Right.
Like getting that price of carbon right.
Right.
That's crucial.
Yeah.
Too low. And it's basically just like the cost of doing business.
Right.
It doesn't really change anyone's behavior.
Right.
But if it's too high, then it could backfire. Right.
Yeah.
You could stifle economic growth. Especially in those countries that are already, you know, dealing with poverty and underdevelopment.
So you're trying to find that that sweet spot.
Yeah.
That Goldilocks zone for, you know, carbon pricing.
Right.
Not too hot, not too cold. But here's the thing I keep coming back to after reading this essay. Like, what if this whole approach, this whole idea of using markets to fix a problem created by markets, what if that's just like, what if we're missing something?
And you've hit on like a really key point that Husinov makes. He actually poses this really interesting question. Can we actually solve a problem that's rooted in overconsumption, in the way that we extract resources and, you know, often prioritize profit above all else? Can we really solve that using the same tools that got us into this mess in the first place?
Right. It's like using, I don't know, it's like trying to put out a fire with more fire.
Yeah, yeah.
So if market-based solutions are maybe like a Band-Aid on a much bigger wound.
Right.
Where do we go from here? Like, what's the alternative?
Well, I mean, Husinov, he doesn't necessarily have like a simple solution. you know? And honestly, I think that's a good thing. I think he's really pushing us here to think beyond just, you know, those easy answers, those quick fixes, and really just sit with how complex this whole thing really is. But he does offer a few kind of guideposts. He argues that real progress, it requires like a fundamental shift in perspective.
No.
We have to move away from this idea of just creating a level playing field when it comes to green trade, because as he points out, the starting lines are anything but equal.
Right, because a level playing field for someone who's already dealing with the impacts of climate change,
mm-hmm.
who's been systematically disadvantaged, that looks a lot different than a level playing field for, you know, someone who's benefited from the very system that caused these problems in the first place.
Exactly, exactly. And that brings us back to CBAM, right?
Right.
Because what Husinov argues is that, yeah, okay, maybe it works legally. Maybe it makes sense within, like, our current global trade framework. But if it's going to actually work, if it's going to be successful, it's going to take a lot more than that. It's going to take genuine global cooperation.
Right.
It's going to take a willingness to actually acknowledge these historical inequities. And it's going to take real, tangible support for developing countries, you know, as they try to figure out how to navigate this incredibly complex transition.
So less about just like imposing tariffs and more about really fostering like a genuine partnership.
Right, exactly.
Which brings me to another point from the essay that I thought was really interesting, which is this idea that maybe we need to like fundamentally rethink what fairness even means, like in the context of global trade and climate action.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really radical thought, right? But Husinov, he makes the case that maybe true fairness, it's not about just having everyone follow the exact same rules,
right,
regardless of their context, but it's about creating a system where everyone has a real shot at thriving, a real shot at developing sustainably without being penalized for past inequalities.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like that saying, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. But that's only true if all those boats are actually starting at the same level. If some of them are already underwater, it doesn't really matter how high that tide rises.
That's a really powerful way to think about it. So where does that leave us then? After this, you know, deep dive on CBAM, global trade, climate justice. I don't know. I'm feeling hopeful, but I'm also honestly a little overwhelmed by all of it.
Yeah.
Like what's the takeaway? What's the thing we can like carry with us as we, you know, as we try to make sense of this increasingly complex world?
I think the biggest takeaway is just to keep asking those tough questions, you know? The ones that make us like really challenge our assumptions about how things have always been done.
Yeah.
Because I think Husinov's essay is it's a good reminder that there aren't any easy answers here. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. But when we take the time to really understand how complex these issues are, when we actually listen to each other, when we listen to the people who are most impacted by these policies, well, that's how we start to at least chart a path forward.
A more just path forward, and hopefully a more sustainable one, too.
Exactly.
That's it for today's deep dive. We'll catch you next time for another deep dive into a topic that matters.